G'day, it's Phil Edwards, Vision CEO here, with a quick invitation to become part of this amazing beacon of hope called Vision. Together we can put our love into action to help people of all kinds build or rebuild their lives on the truth of God. Please consider the part you can play during our upcoming Visionathon appeal, remembering that it's your support that makes Vision possible, including this podcast.
A biblical perspective on life, culture and current events. This is 2020 on Vision.
On a Tuesday, we like to check in with Greg Bondar. He's National Director of Christian Voice Australia, a national think tank and advocacy group for families, liberty and faith. Greg Bondar, special welcome back to 2020.
Good morning, Neil. Good to be with you again.
Hey, Greg, I mentioned there in the introduction, there's some things that are going on in the UK, and as Christians, we might be particularly disturbed by some of these sorts of things, but Christian worship in UK schools being replaced by humanistic self-worship. What have you been monitoring as these developments are happening?
Yeah, Neil, it's very disturbing. I started my career off as a teacher, and so I have some insight into religious education and what have you. But when I found out about this, I started to think what would happen if it came to Australia, because what the Christian education system is trying to do is to make the schools more and more and more secular, even the Christian schools, I suspect. So they're now starting to teach humanistic self-worship. Now, I've got no idea what that means, Neil, no idea at all, but I guess in Australian schools we have a thing called civics now, which they're trying to replace with religious education. So this is a real issue, you know, because parents need to be aware of what is being worshipped in schools. So I'm hoping that we can make sure that we nip it in the bud if it ever comes here to Australia.
Well, I guess what comes to mind for me, and I'll get your thoughts here, when that word self-worship is used, and there's been a number of conversations we've had on this program, even recent times or late last year, the thought of looking within yourself to find your meaning and purpose, whereas the Christian way of thinking of that is looking outside of yourself to our God. This self-worship thing, what are your thoughts around that sort of thing being promoted in schools?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. You know, we've got to stop glorifying ourselves. I've got to stop glorifying man. I mean, we're made in the image of Christ, as you know, in God. And what we have to do, Neil, is to make sure that, you know, we are reflecting our Christian identity. We're not reflecting what society or the secular viewpoint wants us to reflect. You know, you can do what you like, you can be what you like. Some of these may well be true, but from a Christian religious faith point of view, we've got to stop glorifying man and avoid. It is idolatry, I guess, Neil. So that's the real issue here. We've got to focus on our Christian personality rather than the secular humanistic self-worship concept.
And every now and then we'll have an expert on who's able to articulate amazing things of what it is to put your faith in God, to have your identity in Christ, something that's beyond ourselves, so that we're not just completely consumed with all of our weaknesses. Hey, Greg, other things that you've been looking at of recent times, upcoming elections in the US, evangelicals in the public arena, some research out about what evangelicals think about engaging in public policy issues. What have you been looking at?
Yeah, Neil, this is fairly important research that's come out from the US, because what we're looking at here at Christian Voice Australia is, how should we as Christians vote? Now, I know there's a lot of plethora of information from various Christian organisations, but when this study came up, Neil, it was really on how the study was looking at how should churches and church leaders engage on public policy issues. In other words, politics, you know. And this research is fairly revealing, Neil, because quite frankly, and you won't believe this, and I didn't, that they only agreed on two issues, Neil. The two issues that church churches and church leaders should engage on. One is abortion, and two is how we express our faith. Well, that leaves out a whole lot of other issues that affect Christians, Christianity, churches. So I'm a bit surprised, but this has been a fairly extensive study from 23 and 24, you know, interviewing over 1,000 evangelicals. So what do you think of that, Neil? There are only two things they can agree on.
You know, Greg, over the time, I've sort of developed this understanding that churches are reluctant to engage in a conversation that includes the word politics because it can feel divisive. And what I think I've observed, and I think correctly, is that churches are very happy to talk about values because we have a set of values that align to Christ. We have a set of biblical values. And when we talk about those values, then we say we're going to be salt and light. That means how we actually influence the community. So if you don't use the word politics, people are happy to talk about values. But as soon as you use the word politics, people get a bit wary of that. Any thoughts from you?
Yeah, look, I think you make a good point. I'm trying to, I do not shy away from the fact that politics is politics. Call it public policy, call it values. You can soften it as much as you like, Neil. It's about politics. And, you know, and I look at Galatians 6:10, and I don't want to quote the Bible for the sake of political argument, but it says that we have the opportunity to do good to everyone. And being involved in politics gives you that opportunity to vote, the opportunity to do good, to make sure that public policy reflects Christianity, reflects values. And quite frankly, Neil, it's to me, it's so important that churches and church leaders are involved in politics. And I'm actually, believe it or not, Neil, I know I've got a lot to do, but I'm writing a book on it.
Good. Well, we'll look forward to hearing some more thoughts there. Hey, come back to a moment here where you mentioned that, you know, there's two issues that Christians are happy to engage politically on. And of course, this is a US study. So, but the abortion issue, yeah. And we might even observe that watching US from outside, yes, there's a very passionate pro-life lobby in the US. And we wonder why it maybe isn't quite as active here in Australia, because, you know, these are the same sorts of values that we'd stand for as Christians. The other one was acceptable public expressions of faith. And I imagine we could align that with our discussions regularly about religious freedom. So there are two issues, and maybe getting too many issues waters everything down. Maybe you've got to focus on the biggest issues that are the most important. Any thoughts from you around, you know, at least having some issues that you're passionate about?
Yeah, you make a good point. In the US, of course, you had Roe and Wade, as you would well know, Neil. The big argument, you know, on it was now overturned. So there's no constitutional right for abortion in the US now. So the issue here is that what I'm sort of surprised by is that there are only two. But let me tell you something else that came up in the survey, that evangelicals, Neil, were divided when it comes to anti-Semitism, with 43% saying it was a social issue and only 38% seeing it as a religious issue. Now, that's staggering again, Neil, because as Christians, we have every obligation to defend our Jewish brothers. And I think it's very important that we sort of look at the survey and say, wow, they think it's a social issue. Well, I think it's far more than that, Neil. I think it's religious, and I think we have every right as Christians to defend the Jewish faith, because, as you know, it's biblical, and we do have an obligation, I believe, Neil.
And, you know, we've had conversations on this program about the solidarity that Christians need to have with Jewish brothers and sisters. And so when anti-Semitism rises, we ourselves as Christians are often there in the wake of that, and so anti-Christianity rises as well. There's a certain sense in which, if we're grafted into the vine, we don't want to go separating ourselves from that vine. I think there's some warnings there from Jesus himself.
Yeah.
Hey, there's an issue, though, that I'm just, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking that sometimes we might be reluctant to rise to talk about the political space because, You know, there's all sorts of things, the way we think about the end times, the thought that somehow or other there's an inevitable evil that's engulfing us, and there's a certain defeatism. We just, you know, we bunker down and we wait for Jesus to return. Somehow or other, you've got to be able to get a little bit excited about the fact that Christians throughout the last 2,000 years have shaped the cultures that they're in. Shaping the culture comes back to those politics that we're talking about. But what are your thoughts here? Because sometimes we might feel a bit of defeatism, and that might be the big challenge.
Yep. You are quite right, Neil. Look, my position is this, that if we don't defend our Jewish brothers and sisters, we're going to end up then hopefully trying to defend the attacks on Christianity. I had a guest last night on webinar, Neil, the Finnish MP, Ravi Ranasen, and she was talking on my webinar last night, and she made the point that if we don't speak up, then we're going to be persecuted as Christians, and we need to make a stand now. So I think we need to defend our Jewish brothers and sisters. But not only that, there's nothing in the Bible, Neil, and correct me if I'm wrong, that says we have to not, you know, support our brothers, our Jewish brothers and sisters. I can't find anywhere in the Bible it does, but I'm happy to be corrected.
Well, we're always encouraged when we're reminded that our Christianity has Jewish roots, that our Saviour and Lord was a Jew. And there is a certain sense where our connectedness, Christianity to the Jewish people, is absolutely sure and pure. Hey, other big issues, and you're in New South Wales. You're based in Sydney, Greg. The New South Wales Conversion Practices Ban Bill, it's been tabled in the New South Wales Parliament. You've been following this along. It's a very important one for Christians to engage in. What are your thoughts here?
Oh, Neil, I'm quite worried about this. As you know, last week, on the 13th of March, the New South Wales government introduced the Conversion Practices Bill, and now it's being debated. It will start today, and I'm watching it on live TV if it's available, the debate. But look, what's happening, Neil, is that it's being debated today, and then they want to vote on it on Thursday. So they're not giving a great window of opportunity for Christians, for the public to respond to this particular bill. And I have to tell you, Neil, it is flawed, drastically flawed. There are penalties that are there that will put you into jail for up to 10 years if you try and, you know, try and stop your son or granddaughter or whatever it might be from changing their gender. Neil, this is a really, really drastic bill, and to only have 2 days for us to make a representation to our MPs just goes to show you that they're not giving time for Christians and people of faith to respond. And I know there are other faiths, not just Christians, that are totally opposed to this particular bill.
As I've been encouraging listeners, especially over this past week since this came to light, I mean, this is crunch time. And for New South Wales, they've already got even more severe laws than are being touted for New South Wales, already enacted in places like in Victoria and in the ACT. So for New South Wales people, there is a chance to actually speak up and maybe make a difference. You've got to speak up, otherwise you'll just be steamrolled. Is that the case? What are you thinking here, Greg?
Yeah, you're quite right, Neil. And just a correction, it's not 10 years, it's 5 years imprisonment for people who try and change a person's mind about conversion therapy. Neil, the issue here is, quite frankly, that, you know, you can be fined up to $11,000 if you try and take a child or an individual out of New South Wales to another state or whatever to stop them from being, in conversion. Neil, this is a really getting very much like a police state, if that's the case. You can't have parents being told what they can't and cannot, or what they can and cannot advise their children about, especially young children as age as 5 sometimes, that are being allowed to do this. I know there are a number of restrictions, but Neil, this is a dangerous piece of bill, and we've got to contact our MPs ASAP in New South Wales, because quite frankly, what's next is the real issue.
Rushing these sorts of bills through the Parliament, isn't that challenging, Greg? I mean, yeah. How long is the ideal for a bill, once it's been tabled, to allow time for debate before there is a vote? Because it does seem to be rushed to me, and it doesn't seem to have enough time for people to speak up and let their MPs know what their concerns are.
Yeah. Certainly 3 days, Neil, you would have to appreciate that is not realistic. A three-day window indicates that the government is trying to get this through without a considered debate, without public debate. And quite frankly, Neil, this is really, really undemocratic in many ways. I've been involved in politics for a long time, and we've got to give the public every opportunity. A bill should have the opportunity to be, inquiries, more inquiries, reviews, and we're not being afforded that opportunity, Neil. I tell you, as a political animal, we have to make sure that we oppose this 3 days debate. If they're going to vote on Thursday, Neil, it's just not possible for us as Christians to express our views, because quite frankly, you know, if I don't want to be jailed, I don't want to be fined $11,000 because I have substantial harm, but they don't define what substantial harm is. And it's so many flaws in the bill, Neil, that quite frankly, I think it's going to be a real danger if it passes here in New South Wales.
So those undefined words, substantial harm, they ought to have some alarm bells ringing, because who decides what substantial harm is? But the real thing is here, and interesting that it does even interconnect with some of the earlier items we were talking about in our conversation, Greg, that if you don't speak up, you will be steamrolled. And here, again, in New South Wales, as in Victoria, as in the ACT, as is the case in Queensland, a little bit softer there too, but criminalising Christians for being able, and criminalising parents. If you know, just take that another step further, you say, oh, well, I'm not so much a Christian, I'm just a parent. Well, parents are criminalised as well, because they want to protect and do the best things for their own children. If you don't speak up, the battle's lost.
Correct. And Neil, not only that, can I make the point that I remember last year, was it the year before, I interviewed a well-known American who converted, and we spoke to him, and he said the biggest regret in his life was the fact that he wasn't told the facts about converting. He's a male, converted to a female, converted back again. But Neil, I have to tell you, people are now detransitioning. I've heard of cases in the UK, in America, where people are saying, I regret having done what I have because the facts weren't given to them. And it really is not the place for government to be telling me how I should raise my children and what advice I should give them. So, Neil, you're quite right. It is just not democratic for us not to be able to have a more of a say. 3 days is not enough, Neil.
And as we have thought and delivered a number of times over the years, in some sense, when you speak up here as a Christian, you're actually being the only friend to a gender-confused community, because when this sort of legislation goes through, the doctors are not allowed to tell you the truth.
No.
And so if you don't speak up now, you can see a generation getting all sorts of falsehoods and being directed into a lifelong medicalization. And I don't think that if you're, you know, going back to our earlier conversation, if you're a Christian and you have the goodwill of the community at your heart, you'll speak up whether you think this is a dirty or a messy or whatever sort of issue you think it might be, it is time to speak up. Greg Bondar, no doubt there'll be some detail that listeners might be able to access on Christian Voice Australia website. It's the christianvoiceaustralia.blog, and no doubt there'll be some resources there you can call on. Thoughts from Greg Bondar, who's the National Director of Christian Voice Australia. It is a national think tank and advocacy group for families, liberty and faith. Hey, Greg Bondar, just before I let you go, have you got any other webinars coming up anytime soon that listeners might need to know about?
Yes. What we do have, Neil, is the webinar from last night will go onto our YouTube site, and it was a one-hour inspirational interview with the Finnish MP who was taken to court and criminally charged for testing a biblical worldview. Now, how do you like that? You know, shades of, you know who, the great famous footballer, you know, Israel Folau. So she was a wonderful person. She's a Christian MP. You can watch it on our YouTube, Christian Voice Australia. So watch it. That'll be something really worth, and it's free.
Okay, christianvoiceaustralia.blog, and you can access those YouTube clips at Christian Voice Australia when you're on YouTube. Greg Bondar, thanks so much for updating us once again today on 2020.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.